The headlines. Hezbollah leader says Biden's regional visit is meant to persuade Arab states to increase oil production amid the U.S.'s indirect war with Russia. Palestinian resistance group Hamas condemns the U.S. president's pro-Israeli rhetoric upon arrival in Tel Aviv. And also, head inflation in the United States jumped again in June, notching another 40-year high. Hello and welcome, everybody. The leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah movement says U.S. President Joe Biden's West Asia visit is aimed at convincing Arab states to boost their oil production as part of Washington's anti-Russia measures. Said Hassan Nasrallah said the U.S. administration wants regional Arab states to supply energy to Europe so the West would be able to cut off energy imports from Russia. He said the U.S. means to reduce Russia's oil and gas revenues amid Washington's indirect war against Moscow in Ukraine. Nasrallah also touched upon Hezbollah's recent dispatch of three unarmed drones to a Mediterranean gas field, which is disputed with Israel. He said the operation was aimed at showing that the Karish field is not safe for gas extraction operations.
We want the Israelis to take it down because we want their fighter jets to go up and go and shell rockets. We want them to hit their rockets. We want their rockets to come. We want fire to begin in their region in order for that ship and the engineers on that ship, on all those people on that ship, to know that they are working in a place which is not safe, that there is a true threat in that area.
Nasrallah said the drone operation was just a humble start, adding that a new formula is coming. He said if Lebanon is barred from maritime gas extraction, no one will be allowed to extract gas and oil, and no one will be able to sell gas or oil. The Hezbollah leader emphasized that the movement is able to hamper Israeli efforts to extract oil and gas from the Karish field. Nasrallah warned that Hezbollah is ready to take necessary military measures to protect Lebanon's rights. Nasrallah said Lebanon has a golden opportunity in the next 2 months to secure its maritime rights before the Israeli regime completes work at Karish. He urged Lebanese officials to use the movement as leverage in their maritime demarcation talks, saying that Hezbollah is Lebanon's only strong point. Well, the Palestinian Resistance Front says U.S. President Joe Biden's remarks upon arrival in Tel Aviv emphasize his support for the Israeli regime. According to Hamas spokesman Hazem Qasem, Biden's statements are in line with the criminal intentions of those who seek to form coalitions with Israel. Right after his plane touched down in the occupied territories, Biden called himself a Zionist. He also doubled down on Washington's military support for Israel and the strong bonds between Americans and Israelis. This is the first leg of Biden's three-day visit, which will also take him to Saudi Arabia. His administration is facing criticism for failing to hold Tel Aviv and Riyadh accountable for their killing of journalists Shirin Abu Akleh and Jamal Khashoggi. We've reached out to our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, to discuss the reactions to Biden's visit to Israel. He talks about how the regime intensifies its crackdown on Palestinians every time a U.S. president visits.
Hamas movement spokesman Hazem Qasem has slammed the visit by Joe Biden, describing it as an embodiment of the full support of the U.S. For the Israeli regime and its ongoing apartheid and crimes, murder, and displacement of the Palestinians for decades. All Palestinians have expressed their anger towards such visits by the U.S. President Joe Biden, and also previous visits by U.S. presidents to the Israeli regime. That especially that every time U.S. presidents visit the Israeli regime, Tel Aviv increases its violence against Palestinians in the blockaded Gaza Strip, in the occupied West Bank, and in Al-Quds. Hamas movement said that this visit aims to create new alliances between the Israeli regime and some Arab countries, against the axis of resistance and against the Palestinian cause that they are.
Tehran says Washington is once again demonstrating its unconditional support for the most murderous child-killing regime in the world. Foreign Ministry spokesman says the fact that U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan is accompanying President Joe Biden on his trip to Tel Aviv provides further proof of that support. Nasser Kanani has also tweeted a screenshot of New York Times front page collage of Gaza children killed during Israel's attack last year. He also pointed to Sullivan's earlier accusations that Iran is helping in the killing of Ukrainians by preparing to supply combat drones to Russia. He said American politicians routinely tell lies to falsify the truth. Tehran was quick to dismiss that allegation, with Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian highlighting Iran's efforts to help end the war in Ukraine. The U.S. government's latest data shows inflation in the country reached a new 40-year high in June. According to the Labor Department, the Consumer Price Index was at 9.1% last month. That's higher than U.S. officials had expected and is the fastest increase in four decades. Energy prices also posted their biggest annual rise in more than 40 years. Many Americans are blaming the U.S. monetary policies and the current administration's mismanagement for the high inflation.
No, I don't think the government's done a good job, because all last year this began and they did nothing because they thought it was temporary. And, you know, during the pandemic, everybody got passed out money, including stores and all of that. And so it's like too much money floating around. They were very late to the game.
Well, I think the Federal Reserve said it was temporary, so I think maybe we could blame the Fed more than we can blame President Biden. They kept saying it was temporary for quite a while, and they finally had to change their tune.
Following the release of the data, President Joe Biden acknowledged that the inflation rate is unacceptably high. Still, he argued that the figure is out of date and does not reflect a clear drop in energy prices since mid-June. The central bank last month implemented the biggest interest rate hike in nearly 30 years to rein in the inflation, but so far that has not been effective. Earlier in our news review program, we discussed revelations by a former senior U.S. official about America's involvement in coup plots in foreign countries. Here's what our guests had to say. On this segment of the program, a well-recognized face in U.S. politics has admitted to helping plan attempted foreign coups in unprecedented remarks, openly acknowledging Washington's role in stoking unrest in other countries. John Bolton was talking to CNN after a hearing of a congressional committee investigating last year's deadly attack on the Capitol building. The assault is seen as a culmination of an attempted coup orchestrated by ex-President Donald Trump in a bid to remain in power after losing the 2020 election. His national security advisor disagrees that Trump was competent to pull off a coup. Bolton has, however, acknowledged his own involvement in masterminding coups in other countries.
One doesn't have to be brilliant to attempt a coup.
I disagree with that. As somebody who has helped plan coup d'etat,
yeah,
not here, but, you know, other places, it takes a lot of work.
I do want to ask a follow-up. When we were talking about what is capable, what you need to do to be able to plan a coup, and you cited your expertise having planned coups.
I'm not going to get into the specifics, but...
Successful coups?
Well, I wrote about Venezuela in the book, and it turned out not to be successful. Not that we had all that much to do with it, but I saw what it took for an opposition to try and overturn an illegally elected president, and they failed.
In 2019, Bolton publicly supported Venezuelan opposition leader Juan Guaido's call for the military to line up behind him to oust Nicolas Maduro, arguing that the president's re-election was fraudulent. The efforts, however, ended unsuccessfully. Many foreign policy experts have slammed Washington over its history of interventions in other countries. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Director of Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, Tim Anderson, who's with us from Sydney. Also, we have political analyst Barry Grossman joining us from Bali. And let's jump right in there. What do you make of the recent comments made by John Bolton and the rather public confession on national television?
Well, we have to remember that John Bolton is part of the faction in Washington, which is sometimes called realists, sometimes Republicans, where they speak rather more openly about their interventions and wars and crimes overseas, as opposed to the liberal faction, which tries to put a nicer image on it of humanitarian intervention and human rights and so on. So Bolton, of course, was deeply responsible for the fabrication of evidence in relation to the invasion of Iraq in 2003. He was involved in the attempts, several attempts, to have a coup in Venezuela. He was also, as ambassador to the UN, responsible for covering up the crimes of apartheid Israel, including the expansion of settlements and the massacre of Palestinians. There's a whole series of crimes that Bolton's been involved with, and this is not unique that he's admitting openly his involvement.
And Barry Grossman, give us your thoughts on what John Bolton just said.
Well, look, it's interesting to reflect on what he said and why he said it, because it certainly wasn't in any way directly germane to the issue being discussed, namely the January 6th protesters, which are now being characterized variously as people who engaged in a rebellion or even an attempted coup d'etat at President Trump's instigation. And it's important to remember that John Bolton, even though he's a leading neoconservative, he's very much a second-tier neocon, and I think that troubles him a lot. I think he would like to be thought of as one of the leading top-tier neocons, and he's not. So he makes these comments as if he sees it as a way to elevate himself and his importance, when in fact it doesn't do that. But as for the substance of what he said, I think it's pretty clear that the U.S. has a long, sordid history of being involved in orchestrating coup d'etats around the world, that in recent years, the last couple of decades, to be sure, the neocons have been very active in fomenting coup d'etats. We see the consequences of that right now in the Ukraine, for example. And so when he admits to having been involved in planning coup d'etats abroad, it's worth considering what was playing out when he was a senior member of the Trump administration.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Director of Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, Tim Anderson, joining us from Sydney. And thanks to political analyst Barry Grossman, joining us from Bali. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. Construction workers turn out in several cities across Panama to show they're fed up with an inflation rate that's going through the roof. Union members took part in massive protests paralyzing the streets in the capital, Panama City. They accused the government of robbing the poor to feed the rich. Wednesday's demonstration followed weeks of angry protests in the Central American nation. Protesters have been erecting roadblocks to demand a halt to rising fuel and food costs. They also want the government to curb public spending, with the exception of education, as consumers are bearing the brunt of the steadily creeping prices. The government has announced price controls for some food items along with some austerity measures, but the demonstrations continue regardless. Elsewhere, from Donetsk, our correspondent Johnny Miller talks about the latest developments in that region and how Ukrainians are deploying American weaponry to the front line.
We're hearing of attacks by the Ukrainians deep into pro-Russian territory here in Donbass. Just a few days ago, I was woken up at about 4 a.m. by a huge explosion. I presumed it was inside Donetsk city, where I am. Turns out it was in a village some way outside Donetsk. And it turned out that it was a military target. Often the Ukrainians are just able to shell civilian areas here in Donetsk city. But increasingly, with these heavy weapons supplied by NATO, they're able to hit military targets. Now, I tried to get close to that scene of that explosion. We weren't allowed to. It's common for the authorities here, just as it's common for the authorities in west of Ukraine, to stop journalists getting close to the sites of military installations that have been attacked for military strategic reasons. Also, they don't want journalists filming dead soldiers. It's bad for PR. There was also, I was in Luhansk yesterday, where there was reports of another an ammunition depot by the Russians or the pro-Russians hit by the Ukrainians deep into pro-Russian territory. Now, I've been told that these are being achieved with the American HIMAR MLRS system, which has just been delivered to Ukraine. Some of them are getting to the front line, huge distance, very precise weapons. So some of these American-supplied weapons are getting to the front line and doing damage to Russian installations or Russian or pro-Russian forces here. Whether they're going to have the kind of effect to change the outcome of this war is at the moment, very doubtful.
The European Commission admits its current strategy to compensate for reduced energy supplies from Russia is inadequate. Surging oil and gas prices in the EU result from sanctions imposed on Moscow are contributing to economic turmoil across the 27-country bloc. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
Europe is currently experiencing a heat wave. It means that overall energy consumption is lower than usual. However, winter is fast approaching. The EU has cut energy imports from Russia in retaliation for the war in Ukraine. The bloc has agreed deals with the US, Norway and Qatar to import liquefied natural gas.
Is this enough? No, I don't think it is enough. And this is the reason why on July the 20th we will come with further proposals.
If these proposals fall short, the EU faces a major energy crisis this winter. Economists are already painting a very gloomy picture.
We believe that we are going to face a recession during the winter, given all the headwinds we are facing right now, the energy situation, but also the cost of living situation that is having a strong impact on consumption.
Eurozone finance ministers claim all the blame rests with Moscow.
We started our meeting with a discussion on the economic situation, which continues to be challenging due to the impact of Russia's military aggression and all the global developments that arise from that.
Analysts say EU leaders are hurting their own citizens by placing enormous sanctions on Moscow. At the same time, Russia's economy seems to be performing well. Aside from soaring energy and food prices in the EU, there is worrying volatility in financial markets. The European Central Bank is raising interest rates. The euro is currently very weak, which has the effect of pushing up inflation even more. Croatia is due to become the 20th member of the Eurozone in January. The EU describes this as an historic step. The question is, will Croatians have much to celebrate by the time they start using the struggling euro? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
And that's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Hidden Files. When I was a 12-year-old black American junior high school student in a predominantly white school, I was chosen for an important task due to my reading skills and high diction. Well, the task was to read a eulogy to honor a very important white man who had just died. I, of course, had no idea who this man really was and the suffering he had caused for many. It was only later that I came to know the true John Edgar Hoover, the former head of the FBI and the mind behind COINTELPRO. Hello, and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Well, the man known as J. Edgar Hoover had been the first director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and he'd headed the organization for almost 50 years. He was instrumental in carrying out a deadly program by the FBI called COINTELPRO, which stood for Counterintelligence Program, and existed from the 1950s until the 1970s. Now, this clandestine program was carried out against American activists and organizations.
COINTELPRO was an FBI operation established in the 50s by J. Edgar Hoover to target African Americans who were fighting for justice and equality. He targeted Dr. King, he targeted Malcolm X, and over 80% of the targets of COINTELPRO were members of the Black Panther Party.
And this is what they did during the next 14 years, from federal agents all the way down to local police. They would spy on civil rights leaders and others, which was, of course, illegal. Then they carried out assassinations, both physical and character assassinations, to stifle movements such as the Black Panther Party. Now, in order to justify these assassinations, the federal agents would actually fabricate evidence, set up crime scenes by staging false flag attacks, incite riots, and engage in many other criminal and inhumane activities. Now, the groups targeted by the FBI were quite diverse, from anti-war activists to black nationalists, but none, absolutely none, was targeted quite in the same way as the Black Panthers.
J. Edgar Hoover was FBI director for almost 50 years. It is said he had enough information on just about anyone to blackmail them, even presidents of the country. His number one enemy was the Black Panther Party, as he sought to prevent unity in the black community. As FBI director, Hoover oversaw COINTELPRO and ordered agents to destroy, disrupt, and neutralize the Panthers. In 1969, U.S. domestic intelligence budget was $7.4 billion. There were 295 operations by the FBI against black groups. 233 of these operations were directed at the Panthers. 28 members of the Panthers were murdered by the FBI that year.
One of the main individuals who was targeted by COINTELPRO was Fred Hampton. Now, Fred was a charismatic young law student of the Chicago branch of the Black Panthers. He was a dedicated revolutionary and orator.
We work with anybody and form coalition with anybody that has revolution on their mind. We're not a racist organization because we understand that racism is an excuse used for capitalism. And we know that racism is just, it's a byproduct of capitalism. Everything would be all right if everything was put back in the hands of the people. And we're going to have to put it back in the hands of the people. all powers of people. That's saying that no matter what color you are, there's only two classes. And that's saying there's a class over here and there's a class over there. And the reason that this class over here has never did anything to get this class off its back, because this is lower, this is upper. This is the oppressed, this is the oppressor. This is the exploited, this is the exploiter. And these people in this class have divided themselves. They say, I'm black and I hate white people. I'm white and I hate black people. I'm Latin American and I hate hillbillies. I'm hillbilly, I hate Indians. So we fighting amongst each other.
Well, I'd like to welcome to Hidden Files Johanna Fernandez.
Johanna Fernandez is Associate Professor of History at Baruch College of the City University of New York and author of The Young Lords, A Radical History. Professor Fernandez is the writer and executive producer of the film Justice on Trial, The Case of Mamia Abu-Jamal.
Thanks so much for being with us here on Hidden Files. Now, there's so much evidence that the actions taken under COINTELPRO were illegal. So can you tell us why no one was ever prosecuted for these crimes?
Well, the COINTELPRO program, or COINTELPRO, is an extra-legal organization of repression developed by the American government. It's like the CIA. The CIA is engaged in all manner of homicidal activity around the world, but it's an extra legal organization. So that's a great question. Essentially, we would need a movement exposing, for example, the atrocity we saw with the assassination of Fred Hampton on December 4th, 1969. He was assassinated Latin American dictatorship style in the streets of Chicago, actually in his own bed. And you talked about the relationship between political prisoners, their imprisonment, and sometimes the assassination of black radicals. Well, COINTELPRO sent an agent into the organization, the Black Panther Party, of which Fred Hampton was the leader in Chicago. And that agent identified precisely where Fred Hampton slept and where he would be that night that he was assassinated. And he was assassinated by COINTELPRO that was working with the Chicago Police Department. And the question is, what happened to that agent? That agent was so bereft, he was so destroyed by what he had facilitated that he committed suicide. COINTELPRO stands for the Counterintelligence Program of the FBI, and it was developed by the FBI at the height of the Cold War. And in the 1960s, it was deployed against all of the activists of that period, but in particular, it was deployed against civil rights and Black Power activists. And what we see happening in the 1960s is that there's a moral panic created by politicians that uses the term law and order to criminalize Black protest. And if you look at the history of the 1960s, you'll know that there are various campaigns to free Huey Newton, to free Angela Davis, and to free protesters, activists who were being imprisoned. Even Martin Luther King, if you remember, wrote that famous letter from the Birmingham jail because those who were fighting for their freedom to expand the notion of American democracy were criminalized and imprisoned. So the question is, what is the relationship between political imprisonment, the FBI's COINTELPRO, and mass incarceration? Well, that term, law and order, was the ideological linchpin used by the far right, but also by Democratic politicians, to criminalize radicals, protesters, the urban rebellions. And then in the 1980s and 90s, upon that project launched initially in the 1960s against Black radicals, you see the development and the increase and expansion of this hyper-incarceration of Black people, but also other racialized communities.
Unbelievable. Well, can you tell us about the connection in general between COINTELPRO and political prisoners?
Connection between COINTELPRO and political prisoners, absolutely. COINTELPRO essentially investigated, identified those involved in political action, and targeted their organizations and disrupted them, and made it easy or facilitated the criminalization and imprisonment of activists in the 60s, Black Americans in particular. Very important is the relationship between Black, the imprisonment of Black radicals, or the imprison or the repression of the movements for Black freedom and mass incarceration. The fact that there isn't a sustained movement in the United States for Black freedom means that the government can get away with this atrocity. Has 5% of the world's population, but imprisons 25% of the world's prison. We have a situation in which people are framed, not just political prisoners and those who fight for freedom, but people are framed in the streets by the police regularly, and folks are also over. And if you look at the people who are in prison, all of them are poor, working class people. And by one statistic, the average wage of those imprisoned at the time of their imprisonment was $10,000.
Wow.
Is not a salary or that is sustainable in the United States, not even for. So poverty and, of course, racism are at the root of this crisis.
Well, in one of my documentaries, I actually interviewed Fred Hampton's wife, Okuya Najiri, who was lying in bed beside him when the FBI and Chicago police opened fire with about 100 rounds. Imagine this. Well, let's listen to her firsthand account of what took place, and also from their son, Fred Hampton Jr.
Jail, I might be anywhere, but when I leave, you're going to remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary, and you're going to have to keep on saying that.
Fred Hampton was a 21-year-old chairman of the Illinois Black Panthers. The Black Panther Party was striving for the independence of blacks and implemented many social programs.
Can you run me through that, exactly what happened?
Well, on the night of December 3rd,
someone came into the room, started shaking the chairman. Said, chairman, wake up, the pigs are laughing.
The pigs had knocked on the front door, and Mark Clark said, who's there? And the response came back, Tommy. Mark Clark said, Tommy who? Tommy Gunn. They kicked the door in and just started shooting.
And I saw bullets coming from, it looked like, the front of the apartment, from the kitchen area.
I could see, like, sparks going in front of the doorway, like shots. I could smell cordite from all the gunshots. And our bed was vibrating like this.
They kept calling out, stop shooting, stop shooting. We have a pregnant woman, a pregnant sister in here. At the time, I was 8.5 to 9 months pregnant. My baby was to be delivered in 2 weeks.
The pregnant sister was my mother-to-be, then Deborah Johnson, now Okuya and Jerry. She's 8.5 months pregnant with me at the time.
Anybody that's been under gunshot know that 5 minutes is 5 hours. You think it's forever. Mm-hmm. And I found out later that this whole assassination took a total of maybe 15 minutes.
heard a pig say, he's barely alive, he'll barely make it. They started shooting again. I heard a sister scream. They stopped shooting. Pig said, he's good and dead now. Pigs running around laughing. They were really happy, you know, talking about Chairman Fred is dead. I never saw Chairman Fred again.
And I remember saying to myself in my head, you better not stumble, you better not fall, because they will shoot you and say that you're trying to get a gun. So I'm trying to walk, I'm very pregnant, and we're coming out, and there were two lines of pigs I had to walk through. One of them grabbed my robe open, and they started laughing, and they said, what you know, we got a broad here. They grabbed me by the hair and slung me into the kitchen area.
As soon as Sergeant Daniel Groth and officers James Davis, who were leading our men, announced their office, occupants of the apartment attacked them with shotgun fire. The officers immediately took cover. The occupants continued firing at our policemen from several rooms within the apartment. Thereafter, three times, Sergeant Groth ordered all his men to cease firing and told the occupants to come out with their hands up. Each time, one of the occupants replied, shoot it out, and continued firing at the police officers.
People came through the apartment because they didn't believe the reenactment that then state's attorney Edward Hanrahan was doing, where he talked about how the police were met, his brave police officers were met with a barrage of gunfire from the vicious Black Panthers. And people lined up all around the block to come through and see. And through the state's own sticks, they put these sticks in the holes, through the trajectories of the bullets, they could see 90% of the shots were aimed at the head where Chairman Fred.
Well, let's cross back over to Johanna and listen to more of her comments on all of this. Well, Johanna, what happened actually to social activism for change in the U.S.?
Well, movements are not forever, and there's always an ebb and flow. And part of what we've seen is a tremendous uprising, among the largest uprisings in American history, following the George Floyd murder by police. And of course, this happened at a very specific moment when there was a lockdown in this country because of the pandemic, and when many people witnessed the inability of the American government to respond to something like a pandemic. So there was a sense of powerlessness. And then we have this horrific atrocity. And there was an uprising of epic proportion. However, movements are different than uprisings and mass demonstrations. Movements are accompanied by the emergence of organizations and sustained organizing and struggle in the streets that essentially create a strategy, that have some kind of theory of how change can happen that is then deployed. And that we haven't seen, in part because part of what COINTELPRO did was to eviscerate organizations and their leaders, and disconnected an older generation of activists and organizers with future generations. So COINTELPRO eroded the tradition of organizing and protest in this country. And so what we've seen in the last 40, 50 years in the main has been mass angry protests that have come and gone.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, Johanna Fernandez. Well, being the tip of the iceberg while looking at the effects of COINTELPRO, some of the best potential leaders were assassinated. Some had to flee in exile, and others are still incarcerated today after spending decades in prison. Well, this is the best way to destroy any movement. You remove the head, and then basically you have a headless body. Correct information and education are key. That is the reason that education was always one of the main goals of the Black Panthers. They wanted to teach the kids their history. Well, unfortunately, as a 12-year-old, I didn't have the opportunity to be taught my own history. I didn't know the man, J. Edgar Hoover, whose obituary I was reading had been one of the most ruthless enemies of civil rights and other minority movements in the United States. Well, the effects of COINTELPRO is still very much alive. And next week, we will look at political prisoners in the United States and how COINTELPRO was fundamental in having prisoners incarcerated for 4 and 5 decades. Thank you so much for being with us right here at Hidden Files. And make sure we hear from you on our various social media platforms. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zayed Al Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al Uzma Al Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Here, when we're talking about nature, we're talking about respect, we're talking about honor, we're talking about responsibility, accountability, we're talking about amana, we're talking about something that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has placed on this earth for a reason, And we're talking about us representing all of these things in the best way possible. I'm not just talking about, oh, let's plant some trees and let's not waste water, but we're talking about creating a ripple effect in our society where other people around us will also become more responsible and more accountable for what it is that they're doing towards harming and damaging nature. And that kind of accountability and self-awareness is extremely important. Alhamdulillah, we can say that as far as our religion is concerned, it instructs us on a halal haram way, on a wajib haram way, you know, to make sure that we are observant of these things. So if you wrong nature, you are wronging Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. That means you're committing a grave sin. And that itself is the best wake-up call that we need to become more responsible and more accountable for what it is that we are doing as far as nature is concerned. I think one of the very, very sad topics that we hear about when it comes to the topic of animals and animals becoming extinct, animals becoming endangered because of human greed, you know, they need a rhino horn for some kind of mixture in a medicine, and they kill the whole rhinoceros, you know, and no, it needs to be the white rhinoceros, or, you know, killing monkeys because of monkey brains supposedly give someone some kind of power. All these other unfortunate things that some humans do out of greed. The same thing when it comes to nature as well, you know, all these corporate companies damaging and in destroying the ecosystem because of greed, because they want to produce more and they want to sell more. No honor, no respect for the indigenous tribes, for holy land, for sacred land of these indigenous tribes. No honor and no respect for the villages that live there, for what they are going to be leaving behind as well, you know. And as I said, just look at the statistics of these forests that are disappearing on a daily basis. It's devastating, it really is. And it's all because of us human greed. Every 6 months we want to change our desk and our cupboard and our kitchen, and we want to do this and we want to do that.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatih al Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih al Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
You know, there's supply and demand. You know, we want more. And these companies are giving us what it is that we want. We don't feel that we have that level of accountability and responsibility towards these things. So, you know, it doesn't matter if something has become obsolete or not, as far as furniture is concerned, wooden furniture is concerned, we just get rid of it anyway because we want to change something in our house. You know, And then we read these stories about Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, and not even Ahlul Bayt, salamullahi alayhim, even our ulama, even our forefathers, you know, older generations, you know, they would cling on to something and, you know, they'd say, what's wrong with what it is that I have? Why do I need to, you know, get something new if there's nothing wrong with this? Yes, I've had it for 15 years, I've had it for 20 years, but if there's nothing wrong with it, why do I need to change it? That's the problem of consumerism in today's society, that there is some kind of high expectation that you change things even though you don't really need it. And that is contributing in a bad way to the damaging of our nature. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi speaks about this in many, many ways. Most importantly, the destroying or the cutting down of a tree for no purpose. Man qata'a sidratan, if someone cuts down a sidr tree, someone cuts down a lot tree, sawaballah ra'sahu finnar. If someone cuts down a tree, for no reason, of course, for no reason, you know, there's no purpose, no reason, just cutting it down because you feel like it. Doesn't have some kind of purpose. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will cut their head, sawaballah ra'sahu, will cut their head down, will place their head down, will push their head down in hellfire on Judgment Day. لا تقطعوا الثمار فيصب الله عليكم العذاب صبا. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, don't cut down fruit-bearing trees, or else Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will rain upon you His عذاب, His punishment. Then this interesting hadith, all talking about trees, all talking about forests. Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, مِمَّا يَزِيدُ فِي الْعُمْرِ, something that will increase your lifespan. تَرْكُ الْأَذَى, not harming, not hurting people. وَتَوْقِيرُ الشُّيُوخ, respecting your elders. وَصِلَةُ الرَّحِمِ, observing kin between your family members and your relatives. وَأَنْ يُحْتَرَزْ عَنْ قَطْعِ الْأَجْجَارِ الرَّبْطَةِ إِلَّا عِنْدَ الْضُرُورَةِ, and that you stay away, that you avoid the cutting down of trees unless it is necessary. وَإِصْبَاغُ الْوُضُوءِ وَحِفْضُ الصَّحَّةِ, and continuously remembering to be in the state of wudu, and also making sure that you stay healthy. Continuing on with this, we know that there is a recommendation of planting. This hadith says, أَزْرِعُوا وَأَغْرِسُوا, from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, وَاللَّهُ مَا عَمَلَ عَمِلَ النَّاسِ عَمَلًا أَحَلُّ وَلَا أَطْيَبُ مِنْهُ. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, he says, plant trees. And by Allah, there's no deeds, there's no act more halal and more pleasant and more good and more better than this. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wassalatu wassalamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahireen.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind, a momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.